light the beam, because it's time for Nerdy for 30, a podcast where we talk about nerdy-ish movies for 30-ish minutes. My name is Kevin Bauer, aka The Critic's Choice. With me, as always, is the People's Champ, Tim Keck. And joining us again for a second week in a row, you know him from the podcast Everything But Net and from his previous appearances on this pod, defending the oeuvre of Ryan Gosling, Michael B. Breen, how you doing?
Good. Put that on my grave. Defending the oeuvre of Ryan Gosling.
It's going to say died defending the oeuvre of Ryan Gosling because of how hard Tim's coming for you.
Yeah. Died November 6th, 2023. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not when this is out. I mean November, around Thanksgiving or something.
Nah, dude. December. December 21st.
Oh, God. You guys really banking them here.
Yeah, this is a free tape in the truest sense of the word. This is like when you watch a Christmas movie and everybody's just sweating their asses off in coats.
Yeah, that's how I'm going to be editing this. How am I going to get this down to 30 minutes? Good God, I have to cut so much out. We have nothing left. Nothing's podcast worthy.
Everything's podcast worthy because today we are talking about Lethal Weapon 3. Now, Breen has requested that we give the listener a quick recap of how we got into this mess. It is thusly. 2 years ago, we had Breen on to talk about Lethal Weapon, a Shane Black movie written by Shane Black, directed by Richard Donner. We talked about it. Breen said, this is just a bad version of The Nice Guys. So we decided to do a double feature the next year, Lethal Weapon 2 and The Nice Guys. Got into a heated debate about Ryan Gosling's quality that has honestly trailed us throughout the entire rest of the show since. But we also determined that we were going to make this an annual thing, and Breen was going to come back this December again for another double feature, this time Crazy Stupid Love and Lethal Weapon 3.
Honestly, together, an incredible pair.
Yes, truly lovely. A Brie and a Cabernet, if you will.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. So I know we did the first Lethal Weapon because these are some of my favorite movies. As a kid, the first one, incredible. Second one, probably better. Third one, I'm going to say it's a bit of a dip. It's a little bit of a dip. And then four is like, you're going to have a great time next year when you watch four. So...
Good. I'm happy that I'll eventually get to have a good time.
I'm insisting that we watch four at some point. This one, still good. This one, good. I love this movie a lot. I think it is a little aimless for the first half. But then once they kick it into gear and they meet the bad guy, like they're kind of like off doing their own thing. Meanwhile, there's a bad guy who's selling armor piercing bullets on the street, and then they're affected by it. And then eventually their paths cross and like the movie takes off from there. And the last half of the movie, I'm like, this is great. I'm all in on it. I was happy like a pig in shit. I mean, it's goofy as hell, but man, I think it's a good time. What do you guys think?
Yeah. You're kind of speaking to like what one of my issues was, which was I didn't feel like they had much of a relationship with the bad guy. It didn't feel like personal in any way. It was just like he kind of came and went, and like there was no like philosophies that were bumping up against each other. It was just he's a bad guy and they're good guys. There were things I did like. I just think like the Riggs character is still top tier. Still as insane as ever, which I really loved. He's somehow turning it up as the movies go on. He's just getting a little more insane every time, which I really loved. The Murdaugh stuff, that feels the same too, which is good. Joe Pesci being the realtor in this movie as a way to like force him in is one of the most insane decisions ever. This lifelong con man becomes a realtor. And not only that, Murdaugh hires him to sell his house, knowing what he knows about him. And Joe Pesci is just roaming through the house at different points of the movie trying to sell it.
And just keeps bringing them bad news. You got termites. Oh!
Also, the choice for him to come in with bleach blonde hair in this movie just... God. Threw me out of my chair. It hospitalized me. It made me sick. Well, I still loved it. it was completely insane.
It's wild.
You know, while you're in the hospital, Breen, I hope they didn't try to give you a lobotomy, just as they did to Joe Pesci in this movie. I forgot to look up if that's a real thing.
Wasn't it a colonoscopy? A no, what was it? It was something
he
said, else.
He claimed to get a lobotomy. One of the things is he was like, a lobotomy. They're like, a lobotomy? And he's like, no, a lobotomy. You know what happens when you get a lobotomy? They got to shave your nethers. Very strange. Yeah. Forgot to check it out.
That Bush was in the 90s. Not a real thing.
And honestly, still in today.
I don't know. I don't know if that was a pure political joke or not, but I really like...
No, nope, I was talking like about pubes.
Everybody in the 1990s was rocking George H.W. Bush down there.
It was a battlefield, and well worth the juice was worth the squeeze, I guess. If Joe Pesci fucking crushes it in this movie for me, it's so absolutely insane. It's God, he's just so funny. But it's just, you're right, he's just an absolutely insane character. He doesn't even really make sense in the story anymore. I'm glad they forced him in. He does kind of come back with tidbits of information, but he does also kind of fit the vibe of like, they're just bouncing around. The first half of this, they're just going from like, one, they're like, oh, we're going to make a burger. Okay, we're going to just bust up this heist that I guess is kind of related to what we're doing. Oh, okay, I'm going to adopt a dog. And then it's like, okay, now we're going to funerals and stuff. And it just kind of feels like it's all over the place, much like Joe Pesci's performance. And yeah, it just took a minute to lock in for me.
That's another thing is Murtaugh has no business showing up to that funeral. Are you fucking
insane, right?
Kidding me? You brutal. Killed the kid.
Brutal. When,
and
brutal,
he talks
brutal.
To the parents. I'm the guy who shot your kid dead. But you guys get it. He was selling drugs. That was crazy. That he went to the funeral.
He had an automatic weapon and shot at him. It's not just he's dealing drugs. He's got armor piercing bullets. In like what, an Uzi or something, and just going after him.
Fine, but you don't go to the funeral. That would be like SEAL Team 6 going to Osama bin Laden's funeral and just.
Oh, you don't think they did?
Oh, I guess they kind of did.
They were there.
They were the ones dumping the body into the ocean, weren't they?
Roger's getting off to it,
dude. I demented that he showed up to the funeral. Insane. My jaw dropped when he asked his son, hey, you don't blame me, do you? Like, you gotta give it time, Murtaugh. What are you doing, man?
Does he ask his son that, or does his son tell him that?
He asks his son, and then his son says, no, I don't blame you, I blame Daryl. Which is stunning processing, and like, I mean, it's compartmentalization. This kid is not processes grief. He's going to be unpacking this therapist for years.
That's a studio note, though. Like, somebody writes that script and the studio comes back and is like, hey, we killed a kid in this one? We killed a kid? You can do it. We just got to make sure everybody is cool with it. And I mean everybody. His best friends, the parents, they all have to say good job at some point in the script if we're going to kill a kid.
Oh my God, the dad's response too.
What was the dad's response?
You want to do something, you find the man who put the gun in my kid's hand.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Something that would never ever be uttered.
So fucking good. Oh man, I got chills when he said it. Because then Roger's like solving crimes and he has the gun. He has the gun that the kid had used and he's loaded it with bullets and he's just straight up threatening people with it for the rest of the movie. I mean, if there were cops doing this today, they should be locked up and fucking hung in the town square. I mean, I don't know. They're monsters. They're going on a fucking tour like... It's nuts. Him putting the gun in people's faces and asking them like where the gun came from. God, I love it. I just think it's so fun. I don't know. You guys are overthinking this. They didn't like Reginald Val Johnson him or whatever, the dude from Die Hard, where he's like, you know, his arc is that he's comfortable shooting again when his like whole thing is like, I shot a kid. It looked like he had something. Like Roger is in a gunfight with somebody they're shooting like an automatic weapon at him, and he takes him out. I don't feel as bad about it. It's still messed up.
This is maybe the most egregious propaganda that I think I've ever seen, because the scene where they're interrogating the people in the auto garage and they're like, hey, you need a warrant for that. And she just starts beating the shit out of them, just absolutely beating the life out of these guys. And they are bad guys, but she does not have a warrant.
No.
And like, they just get that guy for jaywalking because they're bored and they start fucking with him. It is like,
yeah,
if these were real people, this would be an ACAB movie. The last movie we watched was a Red Pill movie. This is an ACAB movie. We're talking about things holding up.
This is a Marvel movie. This is a fucking Marvel movie. These guys are superheroes. They're going around doing whatever they want to get the bad guy. They're making quips and jokes the whole time. Like, this is Marvel pre-Marvel. That's my pitch on this.
Dude, if this is Marvel pre-Marvel, they're about to get the Sokovia Accords dropped on their ass.
Exactly.
I know what that is.
Yeah.
Breen, I'm so glad you're with us for this Sokovia Accords reference.
Is that a Marvel thing?
It is a Marvel thing. It's when the government is like, hey, you can't just do this. You're operating like with absolutely no,
you guys gotta stop.
You know, blessing. You're crossing international boundaries. A lot of people are getting
operating,
killed.
You're operating with a $300 million budget and taking $60 million home opening weekend. You can't just do this.
Uh-oh.
That's what they need them for.
What was the riff?
Oh, no. Forget it. I can't repeat it. It wasn't even good. Am I still breaking up?
No.
I don't know. I can tell
that was.
Okay. God damn it. Man.
It was going to be a good
one,
too.
My internet connection is unstable.
Like Martin Riggs.
Like Martin Riggs.
Like Martin Riggs.
My man. So I want to dig into this because we're kind of getting there.
Leave it in.
The behavior. And this is like directly why I referenced the Sokovia Accords. The building, I think, gets blown up in the very beginning. Why did Riggs want to go in? The bomb squad was on their way.
Riggs
goes in and he cuts this wire. He's not sure what wire's going to get caught. I'm not worried that they're going to die at the opening scene of the movie. But why did he want to go in?
Because Riggs is scared of Roger retiring. He is afraid of what's going to happen to him. Because before Roger, he was an undesirable. Nobody wanted to work with him. And now it seems like he's got friends in the force and people know him. But still, these guys have become like two renegades that nobody else wants to work with. So Roger retires. He doesn't have anything else to do. And when he's looking at the bomb, he's like, aren't you going to miss this a little bit? Like, he is trying to create more insane memories with Roger through doing this. And then he just also has the golden retriever, like, no concept of himself, of him dying anymore. He went from like wanting to die and kill himself to now somehow thinking he's invincible, which is, I think, a wonderful arc, because it's the same behavior. It's just a different attitude about it.
I think you did have it. And this has been my theory through all three of these movies. This is a guy who's been clumsily trying to kill himself for three movies. Who's just trying. Unfortunately, his body has this fight or flight mechanism to where he can never pull it off. But his mind is in suicide mode the whole time.
Yeah.
Every decision he makes only makes sense if you think this guy is trying to kill himself. Who would walk up to a bomb and be like, not sure if it's red or blue, let's see. A guy who does not care about living anymore.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the love interest in this movie, Rene Russo?
I love
were you
Rene
loving
Russo.
It?
I think Rene Russo.
Their hookup as a kid, I feel like, was very formative to me. I was like, oh, this is what love is. You know,
so he's that's like, why he keeps skulking around judo studios.
Yeah, I'm just looking for a girl who like straight up kicks ass. I need someone who's too much woman for me. And I think that's like kind of, I like how turned on he is by her fighting these guys. I don't know. I think that's what love is. And I think their chemistry is great. And I think them hooking up and like them getting together is what, right when the movie like really starts to pick up for me. And I also think the relationship's crazy because they are together instantly. Like, they hook up once, and now she is, like, his date to a funeral. They're calling each other honey, babe. They're, like, at the end of the movie, which must be, like, 2 days later, he's like, you know, you want to grow old with somebody? And it's like, God, you guys fucked, like, 3 days ago, and all of a sudden, you're ready to die with each other, or you want to grow old together? It was just, it was a lot. I'm here for it. I loved it all, but I recognize it is crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah. They kissed each other at the most inappropriate times. It happened so often, and it was like just like the hello kiss and goodbye kiss, like they'd been together for a decade. It was 2 days. Mm-hmm. And even Murtaugh was like, what the fuck is going on here?
I do love that, how he reacts to each one, like, what are you guys doing, honey, now? What is this?
It seems like they're on a wavelength of their own, which is nice because without that detail later on, it would make it even weirder than it already is, the way that they started hooking up, where they were flirting with each other, and then she says stop, and he keeps going. It's the biggest overlap that this movie has with Crazy Stupid Love, which is just people being rewarded for not taking no for an answer, which is just, you know, a horrible lesson.
Yeah, it is. That part is a little weird. Yeah, but she's into it. It's also like it's classic rom-com like structure where like they meet, they can't stand each other immediately. They're like yelling at each other and saying they're not good cops or whatever. And then they like kind of reluctantly agree to work together. And then all of a sudden they're hooking up. It's just like it's like a rom-com in like 15 minutes. And I appreciate that.
It does kind of feel like there should have been more. She works as a really good foil. She's internal affairs. And that is a position that we associate with being more traditionally like structured than anything we've ever seen from Riggs. So it seems like there should be more that they can do with how this movie is laid out and what themes we explore, where the villain of this movie is a dirty cop. He's not, I believe, a cop that we've ever seen in any of these movies before.
No.
Which is an interesting choice. The love interest is internal affairs, who's investigating this dirty cop. And Murtaugh's whole thing is that he really wants to retire, and Riggs really wants to keep him on the force by showing him how great police work is. How is this entire movie not circling back into this idea of the force, what it's like to be on the force, who you can trust on the force, what policing means to the community? Like, I don't feel like we got any of that.
They bail on it so quickly, and it's like such a fun pull to have, to be like, you're a renegade cop, and you've never really dealt with the repercussions besides your boss being like, you're on different duty. But if somebody from internal affairs is there, that's your actual livelihood. You could use your job. Charges could be pressed against you.
Yeah.
And like that's, it's very fun to have that looming over you and trying to work beneath the surface of that reality. And it never happens. She just immediately joins them and is also like Navy SEAL level cop. While working at internal affairs.
It's crazy she trusts them. Isn't it? She's investigating crooked cops. And she's immediately like, oh no, these guys are fine though. And like, they're the ones, I also love that it's like known. They're like, oh yeah, you guys have like just destroyed the entire city like multiple times. And it's just like, and they're like, yeah, that's what we do. And it's like, what do you mean that's what you do? You've caused millions of dollars. You've done more harm than good. They have. They just undeniably have caused more damage than they've saved. And you know, I can't get enough of it. I love it. I will. My also, biggest beef, though. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say on that, we already talked about the, do you have a warrant? And the woman from internal affairs just starts beating on a civilian for asking for a warrant. It's insane. But go on, Tim.
But they're bad guys, so it's okay. One of my biggest beefs in this is Rene Russo has the ugliest fucking sweater on for that whole section. It's the fucking, it's like,
I gotta look it up.
It's an old woman. It's like something your grandma would make for herself. It is like a Christmas sweater. It's like, it's unfucking believable. And she's wearing it while she's kicking ass and fighting these guys. I think it's absolutely insane. And then they start hooking up. When they start hooking up, that sweater comes off because they're like, okay, now we need that sex appeal. And did you find it,
Breen? Are we talking about this sweater vest?
It's like a button. Yeah, it's like a sweater vest, but it looks like it's knit.
It's like a cardigan type thing. Yeah, it's got like little flowers on it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool as fuck, actually. Really? But I get why you don't like it.
Yeah,
it's nice. It seems like somebody handmade that. It's pretty. If I saw somebody wearing that, I'd be like, where the fuck did you get that?
I think Tim nailed it. I think her grandma made it for herself, and then she passed, and Rene Russo got to take it. I think that sweater vest is this movie's equivalent of Rene Russo taking off her glasses, and actually she's beautiful. As soon as she takes the sweater vest off and starts showing him scars, Martin Riggs is like, oh, actually, she slaps.
Yeah, that is true. I think there's a giraffe on the sweater.
Oh, my God.
And there's an American flag patch, too.
Are you fucking kidding
busy.
Me? This sounds like Ralph Lauren Polo, honestly.
Yeah, this is a nice piece. There's a lot going
honestly,
on,
though.
Yeah, I get it.
Her and Riggs look incredible at the funeral. They look like Roger's like crying and they've got these guns. And then it pans over to Riggs and Rene Russo, who look fucking incredible. They've got their sunglasses on, hair on point. They are the sexiest couple I've ever seen in my life. And they're just like at this dead kid's funeral to support their friend who killed him. And it's like absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Oh,
do you guys
so
have any other like beefs and thieves?
Yeah, let me see here. I liked the idea of like this probably doesn't happen in the next Lethal Weapon, but I'd love it if they did like if they pulled a Mike Myers and let Joe Pesci play every character. Like him in that blonde wig was like, oh, we could do something fun there. I really like to see him as Murtaugh.
He'd be good.
I liked the pouring the guy in concrete and how long it took. I thought that was kind of funny. It like wasn't that smooth or quick. He just kind of like was rolling around and it wasn't done. And they were having a conversation while he was still getting it poured on. And clearly the actor had to just stop moving at some point because it would have been too much. The guy had no fight in him and I liked it.
It's such a badass villain intro, I think, because it is just slow and arduous and just keeps going. It's very cool.
That really that really terrifies me. The fact that this probably has really happened to a lot of people.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
All the mobsters work construction. You know, like there's so many bodies in these New York buildings we're near. I think probably.
I think you're probably right.
I do think the bad guy in this, his motivation is weird. Because they're like, why are you doing this? And he's like, what am I supposed to do? Retire? You're like a cop and then I have to retire? Retirement's boring. But the whole time I'm thinking, wow, Roger's like got this mansion. He's got four kids that want for nothing. He's got a boat. He's living pretty well. And then he's going to get a damn pension. Like this cop thing is a sweet gig. These guys have it made. I'm like, this dude is loaded if he retires in the LAPD. I wish I could. It seems crazy that his whole motivation is like, I don't want my pension. I want guns on the street again.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what he was after. He was he's one of my least favorite villains ever. There was no fear from him. I was not a fan. I was confused as to what he wanted all the time. The things he did were never that like scary. And the set piece choices were weird. Like going to that hockey game just to find him without any backup for some reason, knowing that he just hangs out in plain sight at a hockey game. Like you'd think with something like that, oh, there's a bomb under the ice or something, or the puck is a bomb, like something like that. But it's just they're looking for a guy and then they goof around on the ice for a little while.
Yeah.
There's not a
and
really
then
good chase.
He disappears.
Yeah.
No, the chases are kind of weak, too. There's that motorcycle chase that kind of comes and goes quickly without a whole bunch of action. And the final death, I thought was so boring.
Yeah.
Him shooting him with the bullets that he put on the street?
Well, no, isn't it that he pushes him in with the I don't know tools because I'm not a real man, or like
bulldozer,
or the construction stuff. Yeah, he takes the bulldozer and just like pushes it into the burning house and he's dead. Isn't that how that goes?
After he shot him with the armor piercing bullets in the gun that the kid used to shoot at Roger, he shot through the bulldozer into this guy, fucking him up. And then in like the most beautiful backdrop of flowing hair and fire, he hits the pedal and the guy just like rolls into the building that he built, that he's put fucking bodies in, and is crushed as his body becomes one with all the other people he's buried there. I think it's poetic in a way.
We put a hat on a hat. What killed him? The bullet or the bulldozer?
Classic, well, classic too conundrum. Much. You know, like you get mauled by a bear and then you die from an infection in the hospital. Did the infection kill you or did the bear?
Huh?
Yeah, it's a complicated legal question.
Did I sleep with this bear's wife?
You did. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why I'm trying to make a callback to another episode where we talked about having to fight a bear. I was like, I don't know. Is this bear mad at me? Is he like,
Tim, is he like
slept with
podcast,
my wife's bear?
Assume all bears are mad at you. You slept with a bear's wife and it was a really popular couple. You broke up a couple that all these bears loved.
I want sleeping with the bear's wife to be just a running bit on the show.
What bear?
I don't know.
Just
anytime
we were just talking about
a
hypothetical as to whether I dropped a fact on Tim that in a poll, something like 25% of American men said that they could beat a bear in a fight. And Tim was like, okay. I could beat a bear in a fight.
I said, I'm one of those 25%.
So you know, I would have grouped you in with them long before hearing the stat or your opinion.
yeah. Any thieves?
That's absolutely crazy.
What's your biggest thief from this, Kevin? What's your biggest? You've got a thief for sure.
Oh, boy. What would my biggest thief be from this movie? You know what? The emotional depth, because I think this movie, I think if this movie were rewritten, this could be a really powerful entry in the Lethal Weapon franchise. The emotional depths that they get to after Roger kills his friends or his son's friend. I mean, it does get really powerful there for a minute. Exploring the emotion involved in that, exploring how he deals with it and the anger that comes out of that. It's a great action movie motivation. And I think we could have dug into it more. It's funny that they didn't dig into it more. And also the fact that, there is a psychiatrist in these movies and the way that she's hand waved off. After seeing like just the wave of psychiatry being depicted in movies and TV shows after The Sopranos, it's fascinating. Sopranos is what would we say maybe like 6 years after this, like 5-6 years after this. If this movie happens after that, I'm sure he goes to see the psychiatrist because it's like Sopranos busted open. People were like, oh my God, you can just have characters say what they're feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was but it was not manly until 1999. And you had to have already killed a bunch of people for it to be okay. I mean, yeah, they did it right. Yeah, wait. So what was your thief exactly? Oh, I think that was really interesting. Like having to kill your son's friend because he's part of this underground mob thing. It's super interesting. It's a whole movie.
Yeah.
You could start with that and make it about the relationship. It's not an action movie, but there's like a ton of depth there and it's something that's really complicated. But yeah, they spent, to me, no time on it. And the son, I think, needs to be angry for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like
yes.
He's just cool with it. Like, why do it at all if the son's fine with it? Like, he kills a kid and immediately everybody's like, don't worry about it. Which was really weird.
I like the moment when the kid comes by, when he walks, then the two cops walk outside to get in the car and they see his son is talking to this guy that they know immediately is in a gang. And it's like, cop dad, what the fuck's my kid doing? And then the guy drives away and he's like, oh, is that like this is a kid that he has been a part of this community with. He saw this kid as like a child probably playing with his son and then watched him grow up in this community. Now he's into all this bad stuff. And inevitably they will clash because they are becoming bad guy. They're becoming cops or they are cops and these guys are becoming robbers. And then the word thing I think is really fun. My favorite part of these movies is all the puns and all the dumb like jokes. There's so many. It's constant. But I do love the word thing because I know that was a thing for a minute. And he's like, yeah, are you all right, Daryl, or whatever? And he's like, word, Dad. And he's like, word, Daryl. And then word, Riggs. Word, Raj. And just they're all just saying word to each other. And I think they say it a couple more times in the movie. And it gets me. It's pretty good.
It's fun. Yeah. I saw that this is the longest that the same group of actors has ever portrayed a family in a movie series. And I love that. It reads.
Yeah. Really? Is that a thing?
Yeah. All four movies.
Wait. How did we not talk about Riggs beating up that director to give the daughter her job back? It's one of the craziest scenes in movie history.
It's nuts.
It's absolutely deranged. So
the crew applaud. Yeah,
the crew applaud. That it's so nuts. So the Murtaugh's daughter is on set for a movie. They go to visit her, and she get and they what do they do on set that bothers them?
She's like held at gunpoint.
Why did she get fired?
Oh,
no,
because
but like why does she get fired?
Oh, because he thinks she's really being like mugged or assaulted, and so he jumps in and tackles the guy.
God, that scene is fucking crazy. And then the director fires her, and then Riggs beats the director's ass until she's rehired. Why did that scene happen? Why did that happen?
Well, to establish his relationship with the daughter, I guess. I don't know. It's just fun. It's a good bit. They clearly were like, this is a great bit. People are going to love this. And I like it.
I think they didn't. Hey, they decided they were going to shoot this movie in sequence. And the problem is they didn't have a script. So they spent their first like 100 days on set just fucking around.
Yeah, well, that was actually just Mel Gibson freaking the fuck out on somebody, and then they had to build a scene around it.
It's I think in the first one, is it the first one where his daughter's in like a condom commercial? And like, so in the background of these movies, we're kind of seeing her continue her acting career, which I think is kind of funny. Like she did some weird commercial and now she's in this like indie film or something. And so like things are going well for her. Like she's on the come up. We'll probably see her around LA soon.
Man, probably. We're coming to a close here. So any final thoughts on Lethal Weapon 3 as a movie? Its tenuous connection to Crazy Stupid Love or anything about this whole big weird experiment we've been doing for a couple years now?
I got a question. There's a fourth one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's one more.
Is it the same thing again?
Yeah. This one's more fan servicey. I don't want to spoil it, but it's very obvious. It's very obvious. Like this, like 5 minutes in, you're gonna be like, oh, okay, I get it. That's fun.
Okay, good.
So well, I'll be here. It's a similar vibe. I do like as just sequels, these do such a good job of, I guess they're repetitive, but they're repetitive in the way that I want sequels to be, where it's like, just run it back. I want more of their relationship. It's like evolving over time. They're going through like another argument and experience and just more of the same like kick butt action stuff. And like, it's a relationship between two men who are family more than friends. And I'm a sucker for it. This is what a buddy cop is. Buddy cop, the greatest genre of all time. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that there's definitely an attitude that sequels have to be the same thing, but bigger and longer. And I think most of the time, just the same thing is fine. I like the movie. I just want to see a little more of it.
Yeah. You're going to get that next year. Lethal Weapon 4. And should we finally do it? La La Land. Let's do it. Can we do
lock it?
Lock
it in.
Let's do it.
Are we doing lock Hitch also or not? We're leaving Hitch off.
No, fuck Hitch. We've all seen it.
We have.
Well, maybe we'll do Hitch separately. Maybe that could be like our Valentine's Day movie or something.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That'll be cute. Wow, now we have plans for Valentine's Day. This is nice. Breen, so good to have you on,
guys,
bud.
Then. Breen, any,
thanks so much
any
for
hype,
me.
Any promos you want to give for Everything But Not real quick?
No, that's the name of it. New episodes come out on Friday. It's just three guys that like don't really care about sports talking about them, which leads for... Well, you'll hear it. Thanks.
Hell yeah. Hey, that's almost what this podcast is. Speaking of this podcast, thank you so much for listening, everybody. We will be back here again next week. Until then, stay nerdy, everybody. Bye.
Stay nerdy. Bye.